You're listening to Scaling Up Services, where we speak with entrepreneurs, authors, business experts, and thought leaders to give you the knowledge and insights you need to scale your service-based business faster and easier. And now, here is your host, business coach Bruce Eckfeldt.
Are you a CEO looking to scale your company faster and easier? Check out Thrive Roundtable. Thrive combines a moderated peer group mastermind, expert one-on-one coaching, access to proven growth tools, and a 24/7 support community. Created by Inc. award-winning CEO and certified scaling up business coach Bruce Eckfeldt, Thrive will help you grow your business more quickly and with less drama. For details on the program, visit Eckfeldt.com/thrive. That's Eckfeldt.com/thrive.
Welcome, everyone. This is Scaling Up Services. I'm Bruce Eckfeldt. I'm your host. And our guest today is Joshua Kennedy. He is founder of Imagine Marketing. We're going to talk to him a little bit about his experience as a founder, as a CEO of a service-based company, the work that he's doing, how he's built out his team, how he's built out culture. I always love talking with companies that are doing distributed teams, virtual teams, you know, how that works, how they've successfully used that model. More and more companies I find are leveraging worldwide talent by going the virtual route, going to the distributed route. So we're going to have a conversation around that and some of the experiences he's had scaling his service-based company. So with that, Joshua, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bruce. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be on today.
Yeah. So let's do a little bit of background and just in terms of how you got into this business. I always find there's interesting stories in terms of how people kind of get into their businesses or find themselves in their businesses. And then we can talk a little bit about the work that you're doing and what we can kind of learn from the digital side, from the remote side, distributed side, and some of the cultural things that you've been doing. So what's the backstory? How did you get into this?
Yeah. So I'll take it back to a few years ago where I started actually doing digital marketing and affiliate marketing services. But as far as the company is itself, I definitely think it's necessity is the mother of invention for me, yeah, is really what it's been. But I got my start working for a company in the Tampa Bay area where I'm currently located. Basically, I came in as a digital marketing director for them, and I didn't have that much experience at that point. I just was sort of a polished talker and kind of knew a little bit about SEO and some content and some different things. And so I was able to work my way in there. And then sort of within the first 3 to 6 months of the company, I was able to, I launched an affiliate program after sort of observing some of our competitors. And that was sort of in like the health supplements, wellness space. And then sort of just figured it out along the way as managing it. Obviously did a lot of research on my own and in my spare time, just consuming different books and information online and as much as, you know, different podcasts, and then kind of figured out just how affiliate marketing worked, and then just built the program, you know, to be very successful. And where we initially had started on we ran our brands on WordPress and started initially with a WordPress plugin, and then moved on to Impact Radius, which is kind of like the enterprise software for that space. Uh-huh. And then then basically what happened is I got to a point where I thought it was a good, the value I was bringing to the table wasn't going to ever come back to me in the way I wanted it to. And so I kind of, this was May of 2019, mm-hmm, and it decided to split at that point. And had a couple ventures that I worked in, and then those didn't go as planned. But fast forwarded to, you know, the end of 2019, where I really started, you know, building out this company now, Imagine Marketing. And this has definitely been the most successful venture so far.
Yeah, and just kind of fill our audience in a little bit in terms of how the affiliate space works. Like, what is the basic business model, or how do you serve your clients? What is the value you bring?
Yeah, absolutely. So the easiest way I think about it is the traffic is broken up into almost three different buckets, right? So you've got your organic bucket, which is, you know, branded search traffic and basically all the content on your blog and website that are people naturally coming in. You've got your paid traffic, which is big, right? So you've got, mm-hmm, all the social and display and all that in the PPC. And then the last is sort of the referral traffic, which is basically what the performance marketing or affiliate marketing space really tries to tap into. I think that kind of globally, most studies say that around 20% of e-commerce revenue is driven from affiliate marketing, which is basically partnerships. Mm-hmm. And essentially what it is it's there's a couple ways to do it, but typically a cookie-based software that just tracks user customer journeys, basically from finding information about your product or your service from some partner that you have, whether that's a blog or a YouTube channel or a podcast or how a comparison site, however they find information about you, and then ultimately through conversion. And sort of, and then what happens is basically you get three parties. You've got, you know, or it can have three parties. You got a brand or a person, e-commerce store selling the product. You've got the promoter, and you sort of have the intermediaries, which is kind of people like me who are trying to connect the dots between those two people.
Interesting. So you're basically taking people that have traffic of a particular target audience or of a particular ilk, and then, you know, helping find brands, commerce sites that want that traffic, and you basically broker the deal, provide the infrastructure, the flow between them so that people can monetize that work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And kind of how I, you know, once you, it's all completely relationship-based, you know, so once you have enough relationships on either side of the stack of either the client side or the publisher or partner side, then it becomes a lot easier to manage.
Yeah. So I'm always curious to hear what lessons people have learned. So you mentioned you had a couple of ventures in between those. What were some of the takeaways? I mean, I guess going into this one, was there anything that you had on your list of, okay, let's not do that again?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of ironic too, because the idea was really solid. I think that I just was a little late to the game.
Yeah.
I was actually, so like I said, CBD was obviously, I was involved in CBD, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. And then at that the idea dawned, was like, man, I need to create basically, you know, a storefront where it has all these brands, right? So a warehouse of all the different brands, because essentially the Amazon of CBD. And actually a partner of mine at that time was a gentleman that runs a website called Bro Bible, which is a really popular website. And he's a partner affiliate of mine. And he kind of just like literally a month or two before, as we had been developing that, he messaged me, you're saying, say, hey, check this out. And it was pretty much a fully developed idea of what I'd been working on, which is, you could still, I'll give him a shout out right now. If you're listening to this, it's called CBDEE.com, and it's essentially an Amazon rip basically for the CBD market. But definitely is they were a little bit ahead of me as far as the investment. But also too is for me is like, I left my full-time income to go into something that I thought was promising.
Yeah.
So I wish I would have come up with a little bit of proof of income or proof of concept before I would have split off. It would have made things a little bit easier, I think.
Yeah. I think there's always this balance or conundrum that people get into. It's like, oh, well, I need to pursue my passion, you know, and I need to go all in and I need to burn the bridges and the whole thing, versus the, you know, how do I create a little bit of a phased approach to this and protect myself a little bit. But yeah, I think that one, you know, can go either way. I think there's a little bit of survivor bias. You hear the stories of these people that went all in and then were super successful. You know, unfortunately, you don't hear about the 99 others that ended up having to go get a job afterwards.
Yes, absolutely.
So what were some of the things, as you got into this business, what were some of the new surprises or new challenges that you found, you know, as you started to build out this one?
Yeah, well, I think that there were more barriers to entry than I initially thought. And I think that mainly has to do, is it depends. Like, so we haven't still quite, you know, because we're still young, we haven't quite figured out exactly what type of business we are, that, you know, in terms of 2, 3, 4, or 5 years down the line. And I think that one of the things is that there are, you know, almost in the same way that you can sort of go after long tail keywords, there's sort of a long tail to the partners, which is more of like the micro influencers and people that aren't really that familiar with affiliate marketing. And I think there's a huge market there, but then you've got on the other side, which is more of your traditional network affiliate marketing publishers, which are basically the giant media companies that in publishers that exist there. So the Condé Nast, the World, the Hearst, all of those people that they own basically all the they basically own, you know, 10, 20, 30 publications. All of the content is based around commerce, and, you know, included like BuzzFeed would be an example. And basically these people have their preferred methods of working, and they've got relationships with certain networks and stuff like that. So I think that sort of being able to break in, you know, the barrier to entry there is basically those relationships that have already been established. And then trying to open the door with some of the more traditional publishers and stuff like that, as far as partnerships, has been a challenge that I didn't see initially.
Yeah. And how does this fit into the world of, you know, kind of marketing and marketing services? Because we, you know, we've got a lot of folks that I know listen to the podcast that are in this kind of creative services, marketing services, you know, advertising media kind of space. How does this kind of strategy fit in, and what kind of companies typically use this, and where is it applied most effectively?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, I think it goes back to the referral traffic. So it's performance marketing. So generally speaking, I would say it's under that growth marketing or performance marketing umbrella, where it's sort of like your more data-based sort of marketing and PPC and stuff like that. So I think that's kind of the realm it fits into. As far as, I mean, most, I would say most, you know, medium-sized and pretty much all medium-sized and large e-commerce brands and companies are using sort of affiliate marketing services now. Like, you know, whether they manage it internally through their own software, like, you know, through a SaaS solution, basically, mm-hmm. where they're doing it themselves, or if they're operating on a bigger network, you know, that sort of varies. Or, you know, some people have those, what they call outsourced program managers, which are basically, you know, acceleration partners and all these kinds of guys, which are these, they specialize in this space, which is just managing affiliate programs for these companies. So there's a little bit of variety there, but I would say that it definitely is, it's a staple. It just varies whether it's, you know, in-house or someone else is running it for you.
Yeah. And in terms of your strategy on this, like how have you kind of differentiated, or where have you kind of found your niche in this world, and how has that come about?
Yeah, well, I think that one of the things was that one of the software that we use is a newer software, and so one of the easiest integrations it has is Shopify stores. So it's been a super easy, like we can literally get an account set up within 5 minutes or less if we get the go ahead and credentials to a Shopify store. And just with the growth of Shopify as a, you know, an e-commerce platform, it's been really good for us. So I think that just the technology has sort of created a little bit of our strategy, or laid the foundations for a little bit of our strategy and our clients. And then I think that too is just me personally, is I've wanted to sort of go after, you know, sort of younger brands with maybe some sort of, like, you know, socially aware sort of product or sort of mission base that they have. Those are kind of where we started. And then luckily, or, you know, some of these clients that we've been able to connect and onboard some of these clients, that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah. I always find it's interesting to understand how a company picks its target and, you know, what defines its target. Given the target that you focused on, how have you generated leads, or generally how do you find business? What does your kind of sales process look like?
Yeah. Well, it's varied a little bit, but a lot of what I've been doing is just kind of PR work, to be honest with you, and trying to connect that way. There's lots of virtual networking things going on, which I've gotten some leads from, just like locally and then obviously across country. So I know that there are different entrepreneurship groups that sort of like that you can sort of jump been on or sit in with across the country. So it's been a nice way to network with other business owners. And because we are B2B, that's, you know, typically groups that have entrepreneurs, whether that's on, you know,
Good.
Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, whether that's the networking side of things, or that's been just, you know, operating in Facebook groups that sort of are built around or have a similar value system as us, I found clients that way too. So I think, like, basically B2B networking, whether virtual, digital, but also around those, like, shared values, I think has been the easiest way for us to connect with people and get clients.
Yeah. And on the operation side, tell us a little bit about how you've kind of built out the delivery, and how you've, you know, what kind of team you've put together, and how what's been your strategy on that side?
Yeah, so we essentially have right now it's a remote organization. We have around five employees that help depending on the project. And it's sort of been project-based so far. We do have a couple that are more full-time that are working with me. But that's, you know, sometimes if we need, like, technical integrations work or whatever, it's just more on a project base. So that's something, and that's for sure. Looking forward, I want to maintain sort of the remote organization. I mentioned earlier that the company Acceleration Partners, which is sort of one of the thought leaders in the affiliate marketing world, and they maintain a fully remote operation of probably 150 to 200 people, maybe more, and they're global as well. So that's sort of although we have our own unique, you know, sort of client and sort of ethos to our business, that's definitely a good model for us sort of to follow. And so I kind of look to them as saying, hey, remote organization, thought leader, there's something here.
Yeah. What do you like about the remote?
Well, I mean, I think that one is that just the, for me, it just probably has to do with me mainly as an employee is what I prefer, because I just, whenever I felt like I was restricted to going into the office one day, I just felt like it just kind of, I just got bored of it, to be honest with you. And I know that my desire to show up every day. So, you know, I think that's probably also maybe a hit on the culture that I was involved in, you know, if it was a really great workplace culture. But I know that there, you know, people are cut from a ton of different cloths. So some people thrive in with more consistency and predictability, and other people's like a little bit more, or other people like a little more freedom. So I think, you know, as well as not being geographically restricted and having access to different people and stuff like that, and maybe even being easier, you know, obviously saving things like traffic times and, you know, to time in traffic and whatever. And two, I really believe that personally, it's like I'm probably more productive working on my own. So there's a lot of reasons, but definitely it was sort of, you know, originated from the fact of my experience as an employee for a company, and then sort of setting that up for the people that I want to work with.
Yeah. And I guess, what are some of the downsides? I mean, what are some of the things that you've had to figure out how to manage differently, or, you know, structure routines, things like that, to be able to keep that kind of functional and productive for yourself?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the biggest things is just the accountability side of things. It's just, I don't want to be someone who's constant. I don't want to be, you know, standing over someone's shoulder, standing over employees' shoulders. So there's just a little bit of trust that has to be involved in terms of the work, you know, finding the right people and, you know, trying to measure their output and all of that kind of stuff. So one of the ways that, especially for the account managers, is that I, you know, and this is kind of, I know this is sales in general, but it's just make it heavily, heavily incentivized as far as the acquisition of new clients. So, you know, whether we can attribute specific campaigns to account managers, or we can attribute specific to, I'm happy to share in, you know, in terms of like on a performance basis, like strong percentages, but I just want to make sure that I'm basically attributing the, you know, the work of the profit from the company exactly to the source of it. So,
yeah. Well, and have you found that, you know, some people thrive in that world, some people don't, and how do you make sure that you're bringing on the right people that are going to be successful in this model and this approach?
Yeah. Well, I think initially it's more of taking in the potential, you know, colleague, employee as a whole person initially. So I kind of am a believer, it's like the way you do one thing is the way that you do everything, sort of thing. Yeah. So it's like trying to dig into the personality profile and just get to know them as a human being before. And just because we do have sort of we are sort of a quote unquote mission based organization, helping other mission based organizations, although everyone will tell you that they have a mission. So it's one of those things, is like, but like I said, in terms of like being able to, what is the saying, say, like, you know, when you try to please everyone, you please no one.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So whenever I try to, as far as like really sort of honing down on who we are and sort of the employees that we want and the clients that we want, that's been the best way for me so far to get access to clients and start the conversation. So I'm going to keep in line. I'm going to build from that culture or that mission from, you know, as a central component, and then, you know, kind of let everything else fall into place.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm just always curious when people have a particular culture or have a particular work environment that they're hiring into, what are the kind of the questions, the processes that you use to really kind of get that information, you know, and I'm, you know, whether they're exercises you have people do, where you find people, the interview questions that you ask, how you set up the interviews. I mean, is there anything, like what tricks have you learned to really find the information as part of the recruiting process so that you get the best people?
Yeah. So like I said, this is an evolving process, but one of the things that I steer away from is because I've been sort of, you know, systematized and tested and you know, all those, you know, sometimes when you apply for modern companies, it feels like you're taking a Rorschach test or IQ test.
Tell me about your
like
mother.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like I've sort of steered away from that. And I think one of the best ways to, you know, to find people is to obviously look at their, you know, try to find the current employers that have a similar, you know, as if you're going to, you know, sort of cherry pick your employees from other companies, or at least offer them, as one of the ways is to find organizations that have a similar sort of mindset and mission as you do. So although I haven't done it yet, and companies like Acceleration Partners that have an internal mission and value system. And then you have, you know, maybe your entry level or your managerial level, and maybe that, you know, they could step up and be a director at my company or whatever. It's like, that's potentially good organization to look for. So I think that one of the easiest, you know, to put it, to give it to you straight, is that, you know, because we don't have the size and the experience right now to really have a full vetting process as far as the HR and all of that kind of stuff, I think one of the shortcuts for us is to look, like I said, find other organizations that are kind of where we are or ahead of where we want to be, and sort of look from there.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good strategy. I mean, I certainly have seen a lot of companies, particularly earlier stage, you know, leverage, you know, companies that are in their space, but much bigger. Because, you know, the other thing that happens is that, you know, a lot of folks, when they join a company that's, you know, less than a dozen, you know, a couple dozen people, you know, once you get to a couple hundred people, it's a really different company. And oftentimes that is no longer a great fit for them. And so they're looking for new earlier stage opportunities. And you can sometimes find some folks that are in those companies, have been in there for a while. They're looking for an earlier, kind of more entrepreneurial kind of, you know, environment to work in, and can be a great way to actually pull some really great talent with some really great experience.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about the system side. So, I mean, you mentioned that you've got some software that kind of underpins the affiliate management side of it, but any other kind of tools, systems, you know, technology that you found helpful in managing and growing the business?
Yeah, I can kind of touch on this with, you know, it's sort of right now currently in my organization and also with my previous experience. I know that right now, a lot of the you know, there's a company, well, I think that in general, affiliate marketing or performance marketing is sort of picking up steam as a service. And so I think that these subsidiaries or sort of like the supporting, you know, software or whatever are also growing. So a couple of the things is like Publisher Discovery and Media Rails, which are basically partner competitor analysis platforms and also partner sourcing platforms where you identify partners to work with. Those are two good platforms to use. As far as just like doing a lot of the basic research and sort of digging into our clients, we just use SEMrush for a lot of that, which has been always my favorite. I've used a variety of different tools, but SEMrush has always been my favorite platform. Mm-hmm. I know there's multiple keyword monitoring services and stuff like that, you know, but BuzzSumo was one that I used to use. As far as what I would do is I would basically, say whatever product we're selling, I'm sitting in front of me, I've got a phone in front of me. So they're selling phone cases. Well, I'd be able to figure out what, not only what our brand phone case is, but also the top 5 or 10 other brands. And then I'd be able, and then also maybe 5 keywords or 10 keywords that are product related or search related to the phone case. Right. And then I'd be able to set all those keyword, like basically keyword following, keyword mention sort of things. And then I'd be able to sort of track where all the content is being produced or where it's all being mentioned and sort of be able to figure out sort of the landscape of a particular product or a particular client that way. And then the great thing I love about digital marketing and then also just affiliate marketing too, is that there are so many just different elements to it. So like I said, you've got the recruiting side, which I just touched on a little bit, but then also you've got the, obviously the campaign and the performance side, which is, you know, actually running the campaigns and, you know, making the sales and sending the warm traffic over and all that kind of stuff. And one of the ways to do that, especially if you're going to just do it on your own side, is sort of set up like the hot jar and the crazy egg sort of things, which are more of the conversion, the CRO type stuff. So those are a few of the things that we're using. I know that ultimately sort of in the future, I see myself as a sort of a mix of an affiliate network, a mix of an affiliate manager, managing team, and then also almost like a PR company where you're constantly generating placements and leads for the different clients that you you have. So whatever software or tools can support those three things, that's kind of what we're using.
Yeah, it's interesting to kind of hear. I mean, it feels like a space where the technology is evolving reasonably quickly. So there's kind of this, one of the skills you need is the ability to evaluate, you know, identify, evaluate, and integrate potentially new technologies as the space evolves. I mean, how do you do that? How do you stay abreast of kind of all the new things that are happening and the new tools and the new strategies? I mean, what's your process for staying on top of the game?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. Like I said, one of the things would just be to lean on some of the other agencies, like I said earlier, in terms of like their own blogs, white papers, whatever, emails, all of those kinds of things. I know that there are different conferences. I've been to different trade shows and stuff, but I haven't personally been to one of the affiliate conferences. But now that I'm sort of breaking into this a little bit more seriously, is that I'm sure there's a lot of good information there. But yeah, it's also what I would say is a little bit different about our industry is that there isn't one single source, sort of educational or informational source to go to. You know, so I know that some of these, like, you know, Search Engine Journal and all these major, you know, news sources, education sources, but we don't have sort of a standout platform for that. So it's interesting. It's almost like you're trying to piecemeal different parts together in order to sort of get an overall picture of what you should do and stay abreast of. And I think that the best you can do is sort of like finding new clients or finding new partners or whatever, is that you can try to find the information where you can, but then you also lean on, like I said, your other competitors and stuff like that to do some of the work for you. So that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah. And I always love to kind of understand people's pricing strategies and how you approach that, because I find a lot of, you know, it's a hot topic for many companies, particularly on this kind of the service side where it's, you know, it's a little more ambiguous or it's a little more ethereal in terms of what you're actually providing. I guess tell me about how you price things, you know, just kind of how you approach pricing, how is that developed developed over time? How have you negotiated those? What is this? You have packages. Do you really look at a per customer case? Tell me a little bit about that part of it.
Yeah. Because it is B2B right now, it's like we're taking it a little bit more. We're taking it a little bit more case by case. Mm-hmm. And typically how we work, because essentially what we do is how we differentiate ourselves from anyone, right? Or try to open the conversation is we try to say that we are a service or we are a company that has no risk, essentially. So basically, we acquire you new customers or we acquire you new sales without you having to spend anything upfront, whether that's onboarding, whether that's training, you know, all of those kinds of things. And we can, on our side, is that we can sort of lose resources in terms of we can lose time and energy and all that kind of stuff. And that's something that we're willing to take on. So as far as moving forward is that we, because we're a revenue share model, right? So new customers acquired, new sales acquired, yep. Is that we have to find and work with partners that have enough margin or enough, enough margin for us to split it three ways, essentially. So on the initial sale, obviously for the person that's fulfilling the order and the company, we have the partner who is advertising, has the audience. Then we have ourselves who is working to try to piece these two things together. So thankfully, you know, and I know that there are sort of industries that have either such competition or such scale that it's like, they're probably not good for us to get involved with. So I think some of the typical industries that are popular for sort of our, so far as what we found, we have one is like some of the home goods has been something that we've been able to work in, home, you know, furnishing. Mm-hmm. We've also been able to work like a lot of like cosmetics and, you know, skincare and all the health and wellness stuff is something as well. So I think eventually what's going to happen is, you know, once, you know, we get two to, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years down the line, we're going to have a good feel for where each of the markets is at that we're able to work with. Mm-hmm. And then sort of know what and then almost have tiers of saying, okay, so we know what this type of partner is willing to demand in this industry. We know what the average margins are in this type of industry. And so I think right now it's just laying out more of the next 3 years or however long is more of a sort of a data collection. And then it's going to be laying out that framework for the future of real growth or maybe real sustainability, where it's like, okay, we have five industries that we specialize in, and we know exactly how much to pay people, how much margins we should request and ask for. And then we know the right partners to advertise and all of that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah, it's an interesting one just because it's a performance-based fee. I mean, you're only getting paid if the deal gets closed or if the sale gets made. And so you can really kind of tie it directly to value. But I know so many kind of service companies struggle with the whole, you know, how to pay for my services. And they get stuck in the hourly rate and, you know, this kind of this death spiral of incentives in terms of how to improve the system and stuff. I mean, I guess, was this industry just set up as performance-based from the beginning, or did you contemplate doing more kind of time-based fees, or how did that kind of decision play out for you?
Well, I think a lot of it is as well as just for, like you said, for being easy to sort of, an easy entryway into a conversation with a client or something like that is that a lot of it stemmed from the fact that I had a sort of a hybrid pay structure when I was running the affiliate department for my last company. Yeah. And basically it was performance based, but then it was also, and I obviously had a base pay. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that I realized that there's just so much more value in the performance for me, right? So it's like I could scale that to a certain point that it's like, I don't really care how much you're paying me up front. It's like, I'm gonna collect way more on the back end. So I was like, I'm taking that same sort of mentality to this business where it's like, I know that although we might lose upfront or, you know, we might not see returns for 3 to 6 or whatever the thing is, yep. It's like, I'm playing this as a long-term kind of game.
Yeah. I find it's the more I talk to somebody who has a longer term view, a real kind of lifetime value of customer view, and is confident in their ability to deliver, you know, deliver value, that they're willing to take the long-term game. You know, when it's like, they don't have a real long-term value plan, and it's a little like they don't have as much control, or I guess they feel like they don't have complete control over the outcome, then it's hard. It's hard for them to take a pure performance-based compensation for the most part, generally what I find. So what are your next steps, I guess, into the business at this point? What's your next kind of goal? What's the strategy going from here in terms of growing and scaling the business?
Yeah, so one of the things is, like I said, breaking into the boys club of the big publishers. It's really, honestly, it's more of the women's club of the big publishers, to be honest. But it's sort of, is it being able to really like tap into those serious, I guess, decision makers for the big media companies, the big publishers, where they control a lot of the traffic online. And to sort of what I want to do is sync up my clients, figure out what clients they're working. I want to be on their content calendar, their editorial calendar, right? I want to know what your writers are writing for the next 2 months. And I said, okay, I have products and I have clients that'll work with that. So that's kind of, if I could sync up with those people, I mean, I think that's kind of like my ideal sort of setup moving forward is obviously as far as that's one of my first things seeing. And then along with that is sort of evaluating whether we need to make any tweaks or adjustments as far as the software that we're running on. Because like I said, I know a lot of these bigger people have sort of the preferred way of doing it and sort of maybe signing up through individual agencies or networks program like we're sort of offering may not be what they want to do. So trying to find a balance or happy medium there. And then obviously just the kind of focus rather than I'm open and obviously open to clients, and I don't really accrue any more like debt or whatever, the financial costs in terms of acquiring new clients right now. It's like I've got sort of our base of clients that I'm really focused on delivering results for. So before we even, before I even try to scale in terms of new employees or anything like that, even new clients, is like I'm really trying to deliver results, for the people that we have on board.
Yeah, build up a good reputation and then let that help you get to the next phase of the company.
Absolutely.
Josh, it's been a pleasure. People want to find out more about you, about Imagine. What's the best way to get that information?
Yeah, so I would consult our website, which is imagine-affiliate.com. Once again, that'd be imagine-affiliate.com. Right now, we're on Facebook as well. We can type in Imagine Marketing. And then we have a LinkedIn company page. We're Imagine Marketing on there. And then if you want to reach out to me personally, you can reach out to me by josh@imagineaffiliate.com is my email. And then also, I'm on LinkedIn at just Joshua Kennedy. So if anybody would be interested in talking to me, learning out more, potentially our ideal clients, like I said, are sort of mission based companies, with some type of e-commerce store, and then we kind of look at ourselves as a no-risk opportunity for a lot of those people. So if anyone's listening, either as an agency perspective and wants to deliver more for their clients, or specific stores and want to talk to us, and I would love to do that.
That's perfect. I'll put the links and the URLs and everything in the show notes here so people can click through and get that. Josh, it's been a pleasure. I always love talking with folks that are in the throes of building out their companies, scaling, figuring out the next step. I think it's an exciting space you're in. I'm curious to see how things play out for you and look forward to keeping in touch. But I appreciate the time today.
Yes, Bruce, thank you so much for the time.
You've been listening to Scaling Up Services with business coach Bruce Eckfeldt. To find a full list of podcast episodes, download the tools and worksheets, and access other great content, visit the website at scalingupservices.com. And don't forget to sign up for the free newsletter at scalingupservices.com/newsletter.